The following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everybody, to Dave's Gone By, an hour of music, talk radio, high culture, and low comedy, produced by Total Theater and hosted by me, Dave Lefkowitz, and brought to you by our sponsor, Berkshire Financial Group, for all your mortgage needs. And for all your food and copy needs, we also thank the Tondura Grill, 222 Sunrise Highway in Rockville Center, and Minuteman Press of Hewlett. More about them later on. Thanks for tuning in on this Thursday, April 29th. We're here till 8 o'clock. And I mentioned last week that one of the reasons I've been so busy the past couple of weeks is that it's the tail end of the theater season. I'm a theater critic and publisher and editor, so I work on a lot of deadlines connected to when productions are opening and closing. And right around this time of year, things get absolutely nuts because producers are desperate to open their shows by the first week in May, if not earlier. Why? Because that's when all the awards come out. The Outer Critics Circle, the Drama Desk, the Drama League, the Tonys, of course. All these places have deadlines in late April or early May. So, either the show has to open to make that deadline, or it has to wait until the following year to be considered. And if you're the producer of a show that you think could be a contender, you don't want to open it in late June and then hope awards voters remember it 10 months later. So, you get two big rushes, at least on Broadway. The first is the fall. Now, the season itself actually starts in May-June. After all, once you've passed the deadline for that year's Tonys, the next Broadway season starts the next day. But people generally think of the season starting, like all the other arts, in the fall, late September. And then you generally get a spate of shows opening on and off Broadway in October and early November. Then things quiet down somewhat as the tourists come in for the holidays, with the big shows having already opened, and the small ones hoping to tough out the winter. And the winter is tough. Not a lot of things open in January and February. In fact, things are more apt to close, because people tend to stay more housebound in bad weather. With a snowstorm every other week, tourists aren't visiting, and all the Jews are in Florida, so who's left to go to the theater, right? That's why even the big hit musicals have fire sales in the middle of January. 50% off for Chicago, 2-for-1 at Mamma Mia, shows that have no problem doing 80 or 90% business the rest of the year. Well, by March, things do pick up, and everybody gets in gear for the big April push. All the off-Broadway shows that struggled through the winter now try to take advantage of the renewed traffic. And all the new Broadway shows rush through rehearsals and try to stake their claim in time for the Tony deadline. That's why there may not be a single new Broadway opening between Christmas and Valentine's Day, but you'll see 10 between Easter and Mother's Day. So, over the past couple of weeks, Broadway has seen the opening of Match with Frank Langella, Raisin in the Sun with P. Diddy, a revival of Stephen Sondheim's Assassins, a revival of Tom Stoppard's Jumpers, imported from England, Alec Baldwin and Anne Heche in 20th Century, and still to come are the musical Bombay Dreams and the Broadway move of the off-Broadway hit Caroline or Change. So it's been crazy time in the theater world, always is this time of year. And I've been somewhat remiss on this program, Dave's Gone By, in following the late season. I usually do a theater segment at least once a month. In fact, people who don't really know this show, but know me, automatically assume Dave's Gone By is some kind of theater show, like Everything Old is New Again on BAI, or the weekly show tune show they used to do on QXR. But no, Dave's Gone By isn't a theater show, it's an everything show. Smart talk, silly talk, special talk, and music, with perhaps an extra emphasis on theater, since that is my passion, my stomping ground. but not every show, certainly not every segment. And yet, I do apologize for short-shrifting theater the past few weeks as this program went through its schedule change. We used to be on a different night, and I've been tinkering a little with the format. But now, we're settled in. Thursday nights, 7 o'clock on AM 1240, WGBB Freeport, and live streaming at davesgoneby.com on the internet. And tonight, we make up for the lack of theatricality in recent episodes with a really cool version of our segment, Dave's Gone Cultural. My guest is a newcomer to the program, but not to theater, Iris Dorbian. She's the editor-in-chief of Stage Directions Magazine, which is a journal for heavy-duty professional stage people, especially technical folks, designers, stage managers. But don't worry, we're not going to talk tech. Iris and I are going to talk Broadway and review a couple of the shows that recently opened, including the revival of Fiddler on the Roof with Alfred Molina as Tevyer.
Tevyer?
Who's that? Tevyer. And a political drama called 16 Wounded, starring Judd Hirsch. Now, that show closed this past weekend, but I think it's still worth talking about, and so talk about it we will. And we will also give our picks for the best and worst of this theater season, Broadway and Off-Broadway. So don't miss it. That's coming up this hour, Iris Dorbian on Dave's Gone Cultural. But even if you're not into theater, stay tuned, because we also have our flagship segment, our cross between Weekend Update and The Daily Show. We call it The News Gone By, and we have a bunch of fun stories for you this week, including news about balloons, Billy Joel, frisky gorillas, and flatulent dogs. Oh yes, folks, if you've never heard The News Gone By, keep it at AM 1240, and you will. And just in case you're under 15 or 14 years old and you're hearing this program unsupervised by an adult-type person, well, you might want to make sure it's okay to keep listening, because this program is rated PG-13, the Dave's Gone By equivalent of the movie's PG-13. We don't say anything terrible or scare the FCC into right-wing blackmail, but you may hear a joke or a phrase or an idea that your parents might not think you're ready for. So, if you hear it, instantly forget it. Everything I say should go in one ear and out the other. Or out the same ear, if you prefer. It can sneak halfway in, look around, get scared, and back out. Whatever works for you. Just letting you know so you're prepared. And I'm prepared for a fun show tonight, so stay with me on this 74th edition of Days Gone By, titled Feb Wouldn't March, but April May. We'll begin with the news gone by, just two commercials from now. You know who's never eaten at the Tundra Grill? Osama bin Laden. And you want to know why? Two reasons. One, he's an idiot. He doesn't realize how tasty their appetizers, main courses, and Indian breads can be. Two, he must be living in a cave, because for months I've been telling people 222 Sunrise Highway in Rockville Center with a menu at TandoorGrill.com. Osama doesn't even know you can get 10% off by mentioning Dave's Gone By. And you know what? Don't even tell him about the Tandoor Grill. He'll never know it's India-licious. Okay, folks, you've all seen the news. The economy's picking up, but inflation's also starting to rise, and we've seen the bottoming out of interest rates. If you've been waiting for the last minute to buy that house, refinance that mortgage, or lock in that home equity loan, this is the last minute. In fact, it's past the last minute. The last minute was a minute ago. But it's not too late. Not if you have Berkshire Financial Group on your side. At Berkshire Financial, it's all about customer service. It's all about caring for the client. And they do it by meeting your financial needs. Berkshire Financial Group is a licensed mortgage banker in New York State, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Connecticut banking departments. If you go to their website, easymoney.com, you can read their mission statement. Yes, they mention having competitive rates and up-to-date technology, but the president of the company also stresses in the last paragraph, quote, "We have instilled a sense of integrity and loyalty in our staff." That's what makes Berkshire different from all the other bankers. It's why you should contact them instead of some too-good-to-be-true TV offer or some newspaper ad that has fine print you can't read without a microscope. Berkshire Financial gives you the rates, the care, and the quality. Log on to their website, easymoney.com, and see what they can do for you, whether it's home improvements, mortgage reductions, or buying your first condo. You can even pop some numbers into their mortgage calculator and see for yourself what Berkshire Financial Group can do for you. They have a toll-free number, 866-500-5055. That's 866-500-5055. Visit their Staten Island office and mention Dave's Gone By for a cute free gift. Not a free mortgage, just a pen or a bag or something, but something cute. 866-500-5055, Berkshire Financial Group, putting your needs first. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, sponsored by Berkshire Financial Group. EasyMoney.com is their web address. Our address is AM 1240 WGBB on this Thursday, April 29th. Time for the news gone by, a look at events of the past week from a rye and whole wheat perspective. We begin with controversy over a website run by free speech activist Russ Kick. Russ filed a Freedom of Information Act request to show the coffins of dead American soldiers coming back from Iraq to Dover Air Force Base. One controversy is that the caskets, shown at memoryhole.org, www.memoryhole.org, aren't just of casualties in Iraq. Allegedly, some boxes contain remains of space shuttle astronauts and fighters who died in Afghanistan. Fair enough, but the other controversy is just about the basic taking of these photographs. Surprise, surprise, the Pentagon has a policy prohibiting media coverage of human remains. The military is, therefore, very upset at Russ Kick. They feel he is violating the privacy of family members of the dead. Of course, the media not being able to show any caskets or flags or bodies or dog tags or diaries also allows the military to depersonalize the war. In a visual culture like ours, you can understand how hearing that 700 soldiers have been killed in Iraq is a little different from seeing 700 coffins in a row. And of course, the Vietnam analogy again rears its blood-soaked head. One Democratic congressman told folks on the Today Show, quote, "As people began to see the reality of Vietnam and see the 55,000 people who were killed coming back in body bags, they became more and more upset by the war. This is not about privacy for the military. This is about their trying to keep the country from facing the reality of war," unquote. I tend to agree, especially since the photos that are causing such friction aren't even of corpses or body bags, but clean, closed caskets. Of course, people might be disturbed by seeing the logos of Coca-Cola, Nike, and Exxon on the sides of the coffins, but hey, how else is the Pentagon supposed to make up the deficit? Speaking of caskets, tragic story out of Madrid, where three people were sailing in a hot air balloon that hit a smokestack. The balloon caught fire, and rather than burn up, the three travelers jumped to their deaths. The worst part is they landed near an elementary school. One child told the Associated Press, quote, "The bell for recess sounded, and we saw the first and third graders crying because they saw it all. One of the bodies hit the roof and fell to the ground," unquote. It's pretty horrible, and the question does arise, why nobody was wearing a parachute. I think the answer is the balloonists were trying to show the students a basic theory of economics. First you have inflation, and everything goes up, but then everybody gets fired. You have deflation, then a crash, and then a long, messy cleanup. Also in fire-related news, now, I know that drugs are illegal, and they're outlawed cigarettes in public, and you can't even buy a lot of diet supplements anymore, but somehow the beer and wine industry keep flying under the radar, even though they cause more deaths and disasters than all the other vices combined. But hey, they tried prohibition, it didn't work, So now you just have to hope that people will drink responsibly. Which brings us to Thomas Woods, age 59, of Fire Island, and his roommate, Rod Bennett. Woods and Bennett were drinking last Saturday night in their wooden cabin in Davis Park. They were drinking a lot. At least, I hope they were drinking a lot, because it's frightening if God makes sober people this stupid. Because they made a bet. The bet was, which man could stay in the cabin the longest once the cabin was set on fire? Now, this was not a hypothetical pinky bet, so there was only one way to find out who would be Smokey the Wuss. And so, they set the rug on fire. Then, once the flames got going a little bit, Woods fired his gun a couple of times. When 75 firefighters arrived a while later, the house was demolished. Bennett was running around outside distraught, and his friend was found inside, burned to death, lying on a pile of plastic that had melted off the window out of which he was trying, unsuccessfully, to escape. No charges are being filed, and an autopsy showed that at the time of death, Woods was also smoking. But a few hoses put him out.
Setting the woods on fire.
In local education news, a married high school teacher has taken a plea deal from the Queen's District Attorney. Apparently, the teacher had a steamy lesbian affair with a 16-year-old student. I asked the DA, and he said it's a fair deal. She gets to keep her job, and I get to keep the videos. Speaking of sex, in theater news, get ready for the opening of a new Broadway drama by the author of Children of a Lesser God. Although Mark Midoff's Primate also stars Phyllis Freylich, it's a very different play, to say the least. According to the New York Post, Primate deals very graphically with animal sexuality. Tony winner Andre DeShields plays a frisky gorilla in the show, no joke, and at one point, he shows he's taken a liking to his female scientist by marking her, as it were, and worse still, when he gets a little out of hand at one point, the only way the woman can calm him down is by masturbating him on stage. Asked if it was difficult to find an actress willing to do that scene on Broadway, the producer said it was. They did have someone in mind who had a lot of experience having sexual relationships with a big, hairy gorilla, and they asked her, but Robin Williams' wife said no. Here's a story from the New York Post's Weird But True column. We usually get something from them every week. This one's about a new invention, doggy diapers. No, that's not new. They've been used for years by the upper crust, so they don't have to deal with their pooch's lower crust. But no, this new puppy huggy is lined with charcoal, which apparently cuts down on the potency of their farts. The inventor, Frank Morosky, says he waited a year to put the diapers on the market, literally because he felt stupid about it and thought no one would buy them. Now he's selling them for $20 a pop, or a plop. He expects them to sell very well all year round, except for Christmas and Thanksgiving. It's not that dogs are less flatulent at that time. They're just easier to blame. And finally, in celebrity news, for the third time in 2 years, pop star Billy Joel was in a car accident. This time he skidded along a rain-soaked road and smashed into a house. No one was home, no one was hurt. And believe it or not, police say Joel was not drunk or under the influence of any naughty substances. So, he was not arrested or given a DWI. However, he was given a stern warning by police to stop impersonating Amtrak. And that's the news gone by for April 29th, 2004. Please send your comments, opinions, and Pekingese pampers to Days Gone By. P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. Dave's Gone By, Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. Or email us at davesgoneby@aol.com. And if you want to hear older versions of the News Gone By, remember that they are now available on CD. Find out more by visiting the website davesgoneby.com. And please, write to me. Let me know if you like the new time slot, if you're enjoying the show, the interviews, the music, the merriment, daveyvesgoneby@aol.com. As always, we reserve the right to read any comments you make on the air, name withheld upon request. So, send letters, notes, theater critiques, whatever you want, but please, no masturbating gorillas, unless that really is a banana in your pocket. Back after this.
Did you know Dave Lefkowitz of Dave's Gone By is not just a radio personality, he's also a playwright, and his book, Marriage Babies and the End of the World, is filled with the same humor he brings to his show every week. Funny, sad, and true. At only $20 hardcover, $12 trade paperback, Marriage Babies and the End of the World makes a great gift. So get your copy today. Call 516-295-1511. That's 516-295-1511. Or email daysgoneby@aol.com.
Oh my God, the wedding is next month. We need flyers, invitations, booklets. Irving, we are screwed.
No, we're not, Pearl. We'll just go to Hewlett Minuteman Press.
Hewlett Minuteman? What can they do?
Printing, engraving.
Really?
Letterhead, souvenirs.
Wonderful! Are they still at 1315 Broadway in Hewlett?
Yep. 516-569-5577.
Well, stop dawdling! Let's go!
Yes, dear. Day after the wedding, I kill her.
Before you go to the box office, before you spend your hard-earned money on a Broadway show, do the research. With theater tickets topping $100, why not invest the time to see if you want to see it? Read Performing Arts Insider, your guide to all of New York theater, with timely listings, reviews, rumors, everything you need to know before you go. Performing Arts Insider. Single issues and subscriptions available from TotalTheater.com or call 516-295-1511. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport and AM 1240 WGBB.com. Time for a segment called Dave's Gone Cultural, and that's what I do here sometimes, mostly involving the theater, because I'm a theater critic and love the theater very, very much, and want to share that all with you. And sometimes I do it alone. I do a review or play some show tunes, even though I'm not gay. So no, sometimes it's more fun to do this segment with someone else. And I've had a lot of wonderful theater critics on debating and talking about the theater with me on this segment. Today's no exception, and I'm very, very happy and excited to welcome to Dave's Gone By for, I think, the first time, Ms. Iris Dorbian, editor-in-chief of Stage Directions Magazine. Welcome, Iris.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
Okay, I'm fine.
Good. So tell us quickly about Stage Directions.
Stage Directions is a 16-year-old theater.
It's a 16-year-old? Oh, my God. That's a little sick, let me tell you.
Yes, we're the jailbait of publications.
All right.
We're a theater trade publication, meaning that we our readers are comprised of theater professionals who work in small to medium-sized regional theaters, community theaters, academic theaters, and even ministry theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And we provide a lot of practical how-to information in all aspects of theater.
Okay.
Except for directing and acting, because our advertisers, you know, because they feel that actors don't have money.
They're trying to sell lighting equipment and
exactly.
Designs. Yeah. No, I'm really trying to get a sense of the mag, and it's been around for 16 years, and
for nearly 16 years, and the company that I work for, the parent publisher, Lifestyle Media,
mm-hmm.
they bought it about 6 years ago, so it's been heavily revamped since its inception, when it started off as a community theater newsletter.
Oh, wow. And
yeah.
Now you're the head honcho and stuff.
Yes,
that's
yes,
pretty
yes.
neat.
Yeah.
And you're also, aside from putting the magazine together, you're also working on some kind of...
Our second annual summer conference.
Yeah.
Which is going to be held August 8th and 9th at the Hilton in New York City.
Ooh.
And, yes, the Hilton is air-conditioned, so you don't have to...
If you have money, come on down.
Bear the blistering heat outside. It's really very lovely in New York City in August.
Is it a trade show? I mean, what happens there?
It's a conference. A trade show, definitely. We offer a number of sessions in lights, sets, set design, costumes, publicity, audio, everything you need to know about staging a production. And we're also going to offer a few special guests, like keynote speakers Ken Billington, who won a Tony Award for Chicago, and he's a veteran lighting designer, and Abe Jacob, who is considered the grandfather of theatrical sound, you know, the pioneer of that discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also going to be offering a Q&A with the designers of Wicked, Eugene Lee, and Ken Posner following a matinee performance. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Cool. And I think there's like an indoor pig roast, or was I thinking of something else? No, maybe it wasn't this.
No.
Anyway, speaking of roasting and also basting and also, I don't even know what that metaphor refers to, but let's talk theater. Let's talk, because
yep.
It's just about the end of the season.
Oh, yes.
You know, the Tonys are coming up on June 6th this year,
mm-hmm.
and so, like, the last week that shows can open on Broadway, to even be considered, is the first week in May. There's, like, a month-long gap
mm-hmm.
where the voters start thinking about it and seeing things they haven't seen. So, anyway, I want to talk specifically about a couple of shows that opened late in the season, but let's start with some your best shows so far. What were the best things you've seen this year, this season?
My favorite was a show that opened on Broadway. It was actually a transfer last July, Avenue Q.
Oh, yeah.
That has really been my favorite. And I'm rooting for Avenue Q to win some Tonys. I don't think it probably will win for Best Musical. I think it's going to be Wicked. But I think it might get the Year in Town runner-up awards and Best Book and Best Score.
What did you like so much about Avenue Q? I mean, I love it too.
I thought it was so witty. I thought it was so original. I loved the score. It had tremendous warmth and heart, and yet it was so funny and hip. And to anyone like myself and like you, you know, who grew up weaned on Sesame Street, I got such a kick out of like this adult revisionist take on what's really Sesame Street.
You know what's really weird?
Yeah.
I saw, you know, I was a kid, mm-hmm. but I remember seeing like the first week of episodes of mm-hmm. Sesame Street and how weird and wild and exciting that was. And I just for the heck of it, I had the TV on this morning, and I turned on Sesame Street. You know, they're up to episode 4069.
Wow.
Which is, you know, it's kind of mind-blowing that I was there for number one, and it's 4069 things later.
Mm-hmm.
But, I agree with Avenue Q. It's just absolutely funny and delightful.
It's such a charmer. What a crowd pleaser.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some things like maybe it needs to be trimmed here and there, tweaked. But other than that, I just enjoyed it thoroughly.
Some of the songs are just marvelous.
Like that song, The Internet is for Porn.
Oh, yeah.
Hilarious. Hilarious. The lyrics are so bitingly funny.
The Internet is really, really great.
For porn.
I've got a fast connection so I don't have to wait.
For porn.
Huh? There's always some new site.
For porn.
I browse all day and night.
For porn.
It's like I'm surfing at the speed of light.
For porn. The Internet is for porn. The Internet is for porn.
What are you doing?
Why you think the net was born? Porn, porn, porn.
Trekkie.
Oh, hello, Kid Monster.
You are ruining my song.
Oh, me sorry. Me no mean to.
Well, if you wouldn't mind, please, being quiet for a minute so I can finish.
Okie dokie.
Good. I'm glad we have this new technology.
Porn, porn.
Which gives us untold opportunity.
Porn, porn. Oh, sorry.
From your own desktop.
Porn.
You can research, browse, and shop. Until you've had enough and you're ready to stop.
For porn. The Internet is for porn. The Internet is for porn. Me up all night hugging me porn to porn, porn, porn.
That's gross. You're a pervert.
Sticks and stones, Kate Monster.
No, really. You're a pervert. Normal people don't sit at home and look at porn on the Internet.
Oh?
What?
You have no idea. Ready, normal people?
Ready.
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 Let me hear it.
The Internet is for porn.
Sorry, Kate.
The Internet is for porn.
I masturbate.
All these guys unzip their flies for porn. Porn.
The Internet is not for porn.
Porn. Porn.
Hold on a second.
Wow.
Now, I happen to know for a fact that you, Rod, check your portfolio, and trade stocks online.
That's correct.
And Brian, you buy things on Amazon.com.
Sure.
And Gary, you keep selling your possessions on eBay.
Yes, I do.
And Princeton, you sent me that sweet online birthday card.
True. Oh, but Kate, what you think he do after?
Yeah.
The internet is for porn. The internet is for porn.
I hate porn.
Grab your can, double click for porn. Porn, porn.
I hate the internet.
Porn.
I'm leaving.
Porn.
I hate the internet.
The internet is for internet is for internet is for porn. Yeah.
And it's just, it's really, I think it's really, it's a musical that's geared for, like, anybody in their 20s to their 40s,
that
group.
That's your best musical.
Yeah.
You have a best play?
Oh,
you have been that many. You can go off-Broadway for this one.
Oh,
doesn't
my
have to be Broadway.
God, plays.
Oh.
It's very difficult because I wasn't crazy about most of the plays that I saw. There was one play, Anna in the Tropics, which won the Pulitzer.
Yeah.
Which I thought, I saw that. I think that was a case where it probably read better as a text as opposed to being acted on stage. And I feel that way about a lot of Tom Stoppard's works, that it probably reads better as opposed to actually seeing it on stage.
I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily say that about Stoppard. He's probably pretty dry on paper. But with Tropics, I agree with you same conclusion, but through a different means. I think it was just badly directed. I think Emily Mann just had it lay there on stage with no sensuality, no real movement.
But there was no sensuality. I mean, when Ben Brantley was going on and on about the sexual chemistry between Jimmy Smith and Daphne Rubendieck, I wanted to get out a microscope because I couldn't find it.
I mean, first of all, she looks like a chihuahua, and he's standing there looking like the ice cream man. Nothing.
No, he looked like Alexa Hente from the old Colombian coffee commercials. Didn't he remind you of that? Like he's about to inspect your coffee?
Basically that cream.
He looked constipated.
So did everybody in the audience. No, but it was a missed opportunity. I'm not saying the play was incredibly great on paper or that it necessarily is worthy of the Pulitzer Prize or not, but I don't think it got quite the fair shake it deserved on Broadway. Anyway.
Yeah.
Although,
I have to say, may he rest in peace, Victor Argo didn't. I mean, I liked his performance very much.
Oh, yeah.
I was very sad to hear of his passing.
Yeah. And Priscilla Lopez. I mean, she kind of carried the second act.
Yeah. And the gal who was in the ingenue role, what would be considered the ingenue role in that show, she was quite good, too.
Yeah, okay. Maybe. Anyway.
At least she had a pulse, which is more than I could say about Daphne Rubin Vega.
Thank you. Yes, agreed. Okay, speaking of dead,
right.
Here's a show that's still alive for a moment, but it's going fast. Oh, the pulse is receding. One that just opened. We're not talking about best and worst anymore. We're just going to talk a little about some shows opening late in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And two of us both just saw separately 16 Wounded.
Right.
Played by Elian Cryam, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, a newcomer to Broadway, which is actually a pretty exciting thing and a fairly rare thing.
Very rare.
For
plays,
yeah. So you want to tell us a little bit about the show and what you thought of it?
Well,
I guess not.
you want me to tell you about the show or just my feelings about the show?
Well, just tell people what it's about. Tell, what happens.
Okay, it's a show. It's about...
it's about 2 hours and 15 minutes.
It's about the unexpected and unlikely friendship that is formed between a Holocaust survivor who owns and operates this bakery in Amsterdam and this Palestinian who's in hiding from a dastardly deed that he committed in Israel, where he blew up a bus.
Right. Well, you just gave away the whole first
half. It's going to be closing on Sunday. I don't think it deserved the critical drubbing that it got.
Reviews were negative but respectful. It's not like they whacked at it with the
Yeah, but I still remember Ben Brantley's review where he just trounced it totally. I mean, yes, I do agree that some of it was quite superficial. They were glossing over a very serious issue in kind of a sitcom type of way. And it was rather simplistic. It was peopled with cardboard stereotypes, but there are some good things about it.
Like?
I liked the actor who played the Palestinian, Omar Mitwali.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked his performance a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know if there is or can be such a thing as a charming terrorist, but he was.
And you know, and a terrorist where you actually, you know, can, even though I'm loath to understand the point of view of a terrorist, but you can kind of understand what leads him to the circumstances that lead him to the climax of the play.
Right.
You can understand that. And I really credit his performance with that, because I don't think the writing is that great. I think the writing was very underdeveloped. Like the writing for the Judd Hirsch character.
Mm-hmm. He plays the baker. The baker who is Jewish, although we're not really told that until a long time into the play. We just sort of assumed
his character was not as clearly defined as the writing for the Palestinian. But then again, Judd Hirsch's lackluster performance didn't help matters.
What did you think of the accents?
You know, I liked the Omar's accent as Palestinian. Liked his accent very much. I was trying to understand Martha Plimpton's accent.
Yeah.
What was
that?
She was
Dutch, but then she sounded English, sort of. I mean, maybe she was English, and then moved to Dutch, Danish.
And I thought that her performance, you know, with these sitcom charts that's been leveled against the show, I thought her performance was the epitome of that. I didn't think she really skimmed the surface of that role, but then again, I don't think the writer did either. Whereas the actress, Jan Maxwell, who played the prostitute, she gave a wonderful performance.
She was like, you noticed, well, obviously, first thing you see her, she walks out in a bra and panties, but besides from that, I mean, that'll do it. I'll notice Ernest Borgnine if he walks out there in a bra. I think everybody will.
Well, yeah, but it was more than just that. I mean, she had a lot of psychological depth and nuance to it, and she took a role that's rather underdeveloped, you know, that she doesn't have those long monologues that Judd Hirsch has, and yet she made it so interesting that you're wondering more about her backstory.
Yeah, we want to see more between Hirsch and her.
Yeah.
And less between, because, you know, Omar and the other girl fall in love rather quickly.
Yeah, that was another thing.
I mean, lot of time passes in the play, so you can...
One scene... she hates him, you know, and then the next moment, she's nuzzling his neck, and then you realize, I guess they've gotten together.
Right, you know, and I guess it is a thin line between love and hate, you know, a thin line between holding the timer for a bomb and just carrying the bomb yourself. I don't know.
But another problem with the show, I feel that he worked on it very heavily in various workshops because it's so vetted. It has that feel to it. And I just wish, to me, it still needs to be worked on and fleshed out.
I mean, I'll give the writer credit in the sense that he went into a lion's den with a play like this. Because,
of course.
This is 80% of the audience in Broadway theaters, maybe not 80%, but
and it wasn't a plotting,
Jewish. Yeah.
And it wasn't a plotting bore like some other shows that, you know, try to touch upon this very volatile, very polarizing topic. It was actually entertaining at certain points.
All right. But, gosh, it's closed. Anybody wants to make up their own mind will either have to buy it or
but
wait
again,
till
but also, but, you know, I think that Judd Hirsch was the weak link in the show, in addition to the writing, because it just seemed like when I was watching him yesterday that his performance was very mechanical, non-organic. He was just going through the motions. Like that last scene between him and Omar Mitwali where he just lashes out at him, it was like his anger came out of nowhere.
I know.
You didn't see that simmer. And that simmer should just build to an explosion. So finally when he does explode, it should make sense in that moment, and it did it.
Okay, let's move on to... Why don't we go to Fiddler on the Roof?
Okay.
I haven't really had time to talk about this song here. What did you think of the new Goyish revival of Fiddler? And even that's suspect.
Yeah, that's very suspect. That early charge that a lot of critics were lodging against the show, that it was de-ethnicized or de-Judaized, whatever they call it.
Well, there's no Judas in it. That's the Passion of the Christ.
Judaized, whatever. You know, well...
Which will be a musical, I'm sure, in three more years, you know?
Probably. Directed by David Laveau. I think that's just an absolutely wrong-headed notion. It's a complete fallacy, because that completely contradicts the career of Ben Kingsley or John Turturro, two non-Jewish actors who've carved a very successful career playing lots of Jewish characters. And that to me is insulting. And so I can't even give that any credence whatsoever. But about the show.
Yeah.
Okay. I liked Alfred Molina's performance because he humanized the role of Tevye. Because I think when people think of Tevye, they think so much of Zero Mostel's seminal performance, which was very over the top, very schmaltzy, and
great.
What?
And great. To
yes,
the superpowers
you're
of the
right, but
team,
you know,
yeah.
But that came out in 1964. That was 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And the show has become such a community theater staple, such a war horse, that to bring it back to Broadway, you have to do something different with it. I mean, really, you have to inject, you have to rejuvenate it in some way. Otherwise, you know, why am I paying Broadway prices for this? I may as well go see it at a community theater somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, and plus the world has changed in 40 years. So I really liked Alfred Molina's performance was scaled down.
Okay.
And it was invested with an authenticity, a humanity.
And what did you think of Randy Graff as what?
I know you liked her. I thought that Laveau directed the men fairly well, but I didn't think he directed the women very well. And Randy Graff was a prime example.
How did she... I mean, I think there were a couple
of
moments she was overdone, but...
Well, I thought her performance was... And I was very disappointed because I've seen her in other roles, and she's usually just such a solid performer, very reliable performer as well. I thought that she seemed very lost and very tentative at points.
Hmm.
And I saw really no chemistry between her and Molina.
Really?
As evidenced in the Do You Love Me duet. Yeah, I didn't see any.
Oh,
and
so that's where, you know, again, I thought some of Laveau's, what he was doing, paid off very well. Because back in the Zero day, when he was doing Do You Love Me with Carnalova, I think it was, I mean, I never saw him with her. But on the record, you can say it's a joke number. It's still sweet. But he's like, she's basically a shrew, and he's basically a self-involved, and the piece like that, he's like, do I what? Oh, yeah, I know.
Goldie, do you love me?
Do I what?
Do you love me?
Do I love you? With our daughters getting married and this trouble in the town, you're upset, you're worn out. Go inside, go lie down. Maybe it's indigestion.
Goldie, I'm asking you a question. Do you love me?
You're a fool.
I know. But do you love me?
Do I love you?
Well?
For 25 years I've washed your clothes, cooked your meals, cleaned your house, given you children, milked the cow. After 25 years, why talk about love right now?
Goldie, the first time I met you was on our wedding day. I was scared.
I was shy.
I was nervous.
So was I.
But my father and my mother said we'd learn to love each other. And now I'm asking, Goldie, do you love me?
I'm your wife.
I know. But do you love me?
Do I love him?
Well?
For 25 years I've lived with him, fought with him, starved with him. 25 years my bed is his. If that's not love, what is?
Then you love me. And I suppose I love you, too. It doesn't change a thing, but even so,
after 25 years. It's nice to know.
Like kind of at points like this, like upper crust, like Upper East Sider. Who
you
was
mean
just,
Graf, right?
Yeah, yeah. Who was just sort of slumming in the country, eating granola.
But I'll tell you something, when they both do that song, there's affection. It's different. He
yeah,
like,
I mean...
You're like, what? Come on, do you love me? It's a different
Yeah, but I just, I didn't
angle.
See, I guess maybe it was that performance. I didn't really see that much chemistry between them.
Okay. Okay. What did you think of the Well, some of the daughters were fine by me, but what did you think of Seidel and her betrothed Muttle? I'm loading the question, I know.
Seidel, I've seen Sally Murphy before. I actually kind of liked her drug addict in The Wild Party.
Yeah, she makes a good drug addict.
Yeah, strung out junkie.
Irish drug addict. She's all right. She can do that. Everything else,
I thought, you know, you liked... I see, I had a problem with most of, with all of the daughters, to tell you the truth. I didn't think that... I thought that they all sang very well.
Yes.
But I also thought that their commitment to the roles seemed, again, as in Graf's case, a little tentative.
Hmm.
And also, they didn't have the earthiness. They didn't have any earthiness that I associate with Tevye's daughters. And maybe that's what critics, that's what critics single out and say, it's de-ethnicized. But you don't need Jewish actresses
girls,
for that. They
yeah.
didn't have any earthiness. That's, and I also saw it with a colleague of mine from work, and she also mentioned the same thing. They were very antiseptic, very devoid of passion.
Well, no, I felt passion, but you know what? I can see what you're saying.
Very,
I can
very
see
bland.
These girls
and
in
very
the
generic.
Secret garden, you know?
And they were very, like, they were generic ingenues. Huddle's beautiful solo, Far From the All My Love.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous, gorgeous song.
Yeah.
She sang it very well, but her choices were very strange.
Mm-hmm.
She just seemed like, almost like very cavalier about this. Like this, she's taking this major step in her life. She's moving away from her family and her father, whom she loves very much. And yet the actress, I think her name is Laura Michelle Kelly.
I believe so.
Yeah, she just seemed like she seemed indifferent about it.
It was like
very
she
should
go to
I mean,
know,
because this
Penn
is
State or UConn or something. Yeah,
exactly. It just it seemed like because this is a benchmark moment in her life where she's pleading with her father to understand her point of view and why she has to do this, why she has to go to Siberia, you know, to see her fiance, you know, to be with him, and it was almost like, you know, she was telling him that she has to go get a pizza or something. It was,
I
was very
don't
disappointed
quite agree.
In her take.
Okay. But on the whole, I mean, we've been nitpicking a bit, or it's more than nitpicking.
On the whole,
maybe
I mean, I think it's a
criticism.
Very, it's a worthwhile production to see.
Cool. Did you see the Topol one, like 10 years ago?
I only saw the film.
Okay. That's cool. I mean,
I saw the film with Paul Michael Glaser, who played the student.
That's right, and who else was in the movie? It was Leonard Frey, maybe, and Austin Pendleton, and, I don't even remember. Anyway, before we close the segment, we opened, actually, I probably should have done this in reverse, but we opened with your choice for the best of the season being going back from June of last year to now. What about the worst?
Okay, Broadway, off-Broadway?
You take your pick.
Well, I didn't like this production of a new play called Beautiful Child that I saw earlier this year at the Vineyard Theater. I don't even remember who wrote it. I know it's a well-known
Nikki
playwright.
Silver.
Who?
Nikki Silver.
Oh, God. I guess I'm trying to just dispel the memories, you know, from my head, just banish them.
You want to tell us about, I mean, it's a good, let me see, it's a good idea for a play, good plot.
There were some good performances. George Grizzard and Penny Fuller were very good as the parents.
Mm-hmm.
They were about these middle-aged couple who were they're having problems with their marriage. The man, the couple, George Grizzard, he's having an affair with his ditzy secretary.
Right.
And they get a call from their son that, you know, asking them, you know, if he can come home. Their grown son, who's a teacher, and he tells them that he has to because of of a cardinal sin that he committed.
Yeah.
And then you find...
Well, and a lot of cardinals have committed, apparently.
Basically, it's like he and Michael Jackson have a lot in common.
Exactly.
That he's fallen in love with his one of his 8-year-old students.
Oh, who hasn't? Oh, my God.
Exactly. And they've been having sex. And it just deals with that fallout and how his parents attempt to deal with it and attempt to stop him from continuing his lustful relationship with this boy.
All right. Now, isn't that an interesting idea for a play?
It's a very interesting idea.
What went wrong?
I'm trying to actually remember.
Because it went wrong. It went very,
oh God,
very wrong.
I think it just didn't understand the tone. I thought it was supposed to be a darkly humorous comedy. And then it shifted to, like, this insane melodrama in the second act.
Right. And then towards the end, it went into something so bizarre.
Yeah, there was this weird... should we mention what he does?
Yeah, I mean, the play's closed. The play's been
okay.
closed for 2 months. You can say
well,
ever.
Well, for some bizarre reason, Wright decided to script that the father blinds the son. So that way, he won't be able to see another boy again and seduce another child ever again. I find that really weird and very disturbing.
Well, I'm sure maybe that's good. The playwright should have wanted you to find that disturbing. I just was like, what the hell? Where's
I didn't
coming
understand
from?
That. I didn't get that. I thought that the secretary...
Besides, he goes to a Braille school, you know, he'll have all the young boys he wants. He feels like a fun 7-year-old. Big for your age, aren't you?
Plus the subsidiary characters, the secretary, what was her point? And then there was a psychiatrist.
Oh, I hated that actress. She's an annoying writer and an annoying actress, too. Kirsten Vassalar. She wrote Omnium Gatherum.
Yes, she did.
Rebeck. Yeah.
I didn't like her at all. I wanted to throttle her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Ugh, I couldn't understand what he saw in her. I mean,
Let's get this play off. Let's take a minute and just shake this play off of us. Are you ready?
Yes. This is still making me ill.
Let's do it. All right, you got it? You got
okay.
the play off of you?
Yes.
Okay, good. Just in time to close out this segment and thank you and remind people again that you are Iris Dorbian, Editor-in-Chief of Stage Directions Magazine. When is that big conference happening?
August 8th and 9th in New York City at the Hilton.
And people can read your stuff. How can people get Stage Directions, by the way?
Well, it is available, limited newsstand distribution at Borders, Barnes & Noble's, Universal News Outlets in New York City. But also, you should check our website, www.stage-directions.com.
Oh, Iris Dorbian, thank you so much for being theatrical with us
this
episode. I hope you'll come
back. It's been a pleasure.
Do it again. Enjoy the end of the theater season and the summer season, and thanks so much for being on Days Gone By.
Great, thanks.
Bye. And now, the GBB Weekend Medley. Long Island's Dating, Friday, 6 o'clock. Bonnie D. Graham with lots of singles talk. She takes your phone calls and interviews her guests. Long Island's Dating, cause Bonnie is the best. Redman Music Show, Mr. Redman Music Show. 7:30 Saturday night, independent music makes you feel alright. On the Redman Music Show, is the place where you should go. Sundays at 7, make sure that you are home. For fast-paced right-wing politics, your world with Joe Salzone. He tries to keep an open mind and sort out what is true. If you like a good debate, then Joe Salzone's for you. Long Island's Dating, Fridays at 6, Redman, Saturdays at 7:30, and Joe Salzone, Sundays at 7. Make it music to your ears.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this theatrical Thursday. My special thanks to Iris Dorbian for being my guest on the cultural segment. Find out more about Stage Directions Magazine by going to stage-directions.com. Got to put the dash in there, stage-directions.com. You can read a bunch of the articles there and also see if you want to subscribe. And remember, if you're into theater, you'll also want to subscribe to Performing Arts Insider, absolutely the most comprehensive guide to Broadway and off-Broadway available, bar none. Visit TotalTheater.com to find out more. And speaking of places to visit, if you're hungry for yummy Indian food available on the south shore of Long Island, you must visit the Tandoor Grill, 222 Sunrise Highway in Rockville Center, just across from the railroad station. Look for the big sign guiding you to the Bollywood Lounge, and tell them you heard about them on Dave's Gone By. That's good for 10% off your meal. And it's good for the show, because it proves to our advertisers that people listen, they pay attention, and they really hear the message. That goes to the Tandoor Grill, and also for Hewlett Minuteman Press. Photocopies, printing, engraving, little business gifts, big wedding invitations, it's all there. 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, open 6 days a week, 516-569-5577. And of course, I keep mentioning Berkshire Financial Group, sponsor of this program and your one-stop mortgage shop. It looks like interest rates are going to jump at least a point in the next few months. So lock in that sale or refi now. Visit easymoney.com or stop into one of their many branches in the area. 866-500-5055 is their toll-free number. And again, if you mention my show, you get a tchotchka. So what do you have to lose? 866-500-5055 or easymoney.com. And for easy listening, make sure you keep tuning in WGBB throughout the weekend to hear three great shows. Long Island's Dating, Friday nights at 6, the Mr. Redman Music Show, Saturday nights, 7:30 to 9, and Your World with Joe Salzone, Sunday evenings at 7. In fact, Joe is the station engineer on Sunday nights, and last Sunday at 10, Joe played a repeat of this program, which was really nice of him. So give a listen this weekend, and you might even hear me. Of course, you're guaranteed to hear me every Thursday night at 7. Next week, May 6th, is the Mother's Day show. Not sure what my plans are yet, but I promise it'll be fun in a matriarchal sort of way. Find out more by checking my website, davesgoneby.com. No apostrophe in that, just davesgoneby.com. You can also get on the mailing list for our weekly humorous reminders about the show. Just email davesgoneby@AOL.com. And more than anything else, be here next week for the 75th edition of Dave's Gone By. Until then, I want to wish all my love to my wonderful wife, Joyce. All my best to all of you. Don't miss your days going by. Good night, go to the theater, and gone by.
I will go on my way and jump the hedges first. Drink the clear, clean water for to quench my thirst. And I will watch the ferry boats and they'll get high. Against the blue ocean, against the tomorrow sky. And I will walk and talk in gardens all wet with rain. I never, ever, ever, ever get so old again. Sweet thing. Thank you.